Federal agencies are being told to improve the service they deliver to their constituents, whether in person or online. The Obama administration's gambit occurs at the same time large organizations are rethinking service. They're applying the principles of design to the way people work and to the experiences they produce for customers. Those principles are collectively known as design thinking. John Kalko is the Vice President of Design at Blackboard and a leader in design thinking. He joins me now to explain how this shift is affecting government services. John, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Okay, good morning, Tom. Thank you for having me.
All right, so what is design thinking and why is it important now?
It helps to just understand a brief sort of view of what design is. Designers typically make things like toasters and posters, things like that, and they use a process that's about problem solving, and it's similar to what an engineer might do, but an engineer focuses typically on technology, and a designer typically focuses on people. And so if you apply that same principle to complex organizations and to system problems, you get some pretty interesting results, typically humanizing a otherwise complicated process.
And of course, federal agencies produce complicated processes for admitting VA patients or giving people benefits. And you've written that the emotional experience of a product or service is equally important to the details and the technical parts of it also. So how does that come into this whole process?
Yeah, I would actually argue that it's much more important. I think we're at a point where technically we can do a great deal. I wouldn't say anything. We certainly don't have flying cars. But if you think about it, we can pretty much make it. But that doesn't mean anybody can understand it, and I would look to a number of those government agencies, policies, paperwork, and the different interaction touch points to make that point. But I have an example of an agency that's trying, actually, to do some great change. One of my colleagues actually worked with the U.S. military to understand better sexual assault in the military, which is a pretty complicated problem that typically a government agency will solve, if you want to use that in air quotes, with paperwork, with policy. You know, there's rules. If report it this way or communicate with your leaders this way. But it's actually a human problem, and it's illogical the way people respond to it. And so a process around that might be to do qualitative research, sort of what you might consider fuzzy research, with the people affected, with all of the different stakeholders, and really get to understand their opinions and their emotional response rather than their logical or rational response.
And so what would that do to improve or prevent this kind of thing from happening?
It's interesting. What it might actually get you is some sort of more empathetic solution, something that acknowledges that it happens rather than rejects that it happens, puts in place perhaps emotional training, acts in sort of a more human response, and ultimately gets to what we could think of as system touch points. There's multiple ways that somebody in or out of the military interacts with the military. And so if you think about all the different touch points from training to actual deployment to when they are veterans, which you alluded to, there's a number of places where different services could interject. And that might be something like a caseworker. Right, it might be something that's more familiar to somebody dealing with a social problem like homelessness, which tries not to treat very sort of rigidly that approach, but instead actually touches on all of those different customer journey points to create some sort of more emotional solution rather than a technical solution.
And you've written something of a landmark article about design thinking, how it's come of age, in the Harvard Business Review, and in that you cite the Veterans Affairs Department. And that's a department that, for the most part, I think because of all the news surrounding it in the past year and a half or so, is almost the signature example of horrible customer service. And yet there's some springs of hope going on there. Tell us about what's happening at VA.
Yeah, that's right. They don't have a great track record, but they're really, really trying to change that. Again, if you think about how they've approached veterans coming home, it's typically been sort of very regimented. They have a series of things they do or things they provide, and you could probably consider that a checklist. But if you really poke at it, what I think a veteran needs, maybe more than anything else, is the ability to reintroduce themselves into the workforce. And they're focusing on that, again, through qualitative research. And they're learning that actually one of the biggest problems is a veteran might have a ton of skills, a number of different things they picked up in the military, but they don't necessarily know how to translate that into skills that an employer might want when they're a civilian. And so you would pick that sort of that the sort of inside up, only by spending time with the veterans. You can't sort of intuit that, although in retrospect it might seem obvious. If you actually spend a great deal of time watching what a veteran does with their day, you'll realize that they spend an awful lot of time searching for jobs, often with a great deal of sort of unsuccess and anxiety around that process.
And so how could design thinking help the VA fix the problem that it has with long wait times and a difficulty of ingesting people that have medical requirements from getting them into the VA or getting them in front of a healthcare provider in some kind of a timely fashion?
You know, it's interesting. The more that I spend with design thinking and systems thinking, the more you realize that the answer is actually people. And again, I suppose it's obvious in retrospect, but this isn't going to be an online form that someone fills out or a personal self-assessment. It actually requires a human touch point, which, you know, the complexity there is around scale. And really, when you consider this idea in any system, in education, in healthcare, that's really the conclusion that you come to. And so what we have to do is find a way to scale human interactions rather than system or technological interactions.
It almost sounds like architecture. If you started welding steel together randomly and building it up and putting on outside granite or limestone, you probably would not come up with the Empire State Building. So in other words, what you're saying is you've got to design it and conceive it from the outside, from the experience first, and then work inside to get the processes to produce that design.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And much like, you know, we've been in buildings that are sort of unforgiving, they look very good from a plan view. You know, you might look at the city from afar and go, wow, that's a great looking skyline. And then you get into the building and you find that you have no idea where to go. You don't really understand how to move yourself around. And maybe you feel a little bit stupid when you interact with it. And I think the same thing is true about systems. They might look great on paper because they're very logical and very rigid, but when a human interacts with them, humans do kind of dumb things, right? We make errors, we rely on our intuition, which is often wrong, and we rely on our emotions. And so if we can create experience, what I would call experience scaffolds, that support that and really are forgiving to people making mistakes, I think that we would be in a much sort of more humane society. And I actually think all of the services that we touch on would be much, much more effective in delivering their value proposition.
We're speaking with John Kalko. He's Vice President of Design for Blackboard and also founder and director of the Austin Center for Design. And so how, if an agency or a large organization, any company or agency, really any complex organization, wants to reorient itself toward design thinking, how does it begin to do that? Where do you start from, especially when you are an agency where the thinking tends to be very, very process and step-by-step oriented?
I think the key is actually empathy, and the way to get there is by observing behavior. Typically, if you think about how companies, particularly consumer-driven companies, interact with their customers, they ask them questions. You know, maybe they run a focus group or they run sort of a statistically significant survey or questionnaire of the people that use their products, and then they act on that. But what that tells you is what people think they do and think they want, not necessarily what they do and actually want. And so if you observe behavior, again, it's sort of like an applied ethnography or an anthropology, you get to actual intent, right? You get to people's emotional aspirations, and then you can productize those, or then you can build services around those. And I think that's probably the most fundamental thing a large organization can embrace is that notion of empathy through behavior.
It almost just sounds like similar processes to agile software development, where you don't do very much until you check it with the people that have to actually use it.
Yeah, it's a good comparison. I think there are a lot of similarities around that. I think maybe the difference is design, and again, like engineering, does have sort of a planning process. It's maybe not a rigid analytical planning process, but it requires a great deal of what I would call whiteboard time, you know, working through complexity on a whiteboard. And I think maybe the difference between agile software development, if you're familiar with it, is that instead of having a team of developers and engineers and designers and people actually building the software, we have a team of those people, and we bring in the people who are going to use the software or use the system, which means that we have a more diverse set of viewpoints, and we can, again, really get to that sort of behavior intent. And it doesn't mean that that person can tell us what they want or what they need, but they can participate in a rudimentary sense in actually designing the system, and we can balance that out with the expertise of people who do it for a living.
and who within an organization should really make sure this whole effort changes. It's really a reorientation of thinking. Sounds like something that has to be endorsed from the top.
Yes, it's probably both in a large organization from the top down and the bottom up. If you look at the organizations that are large that are doing this, it's GE, it's IBM, it's all of these sort of gargantuan 300,000-350,000, person companies. That change isn't going to come from a groundswell only. It's going to come from the top down too. And we see the CEO of GE and the CEO of IBM standing up and saying, this is important to our company, and then actually putting money on it, right? And companies like IBM are throwing literally hundreds of millions of dollars at new buildings, at hiring designers, at training people and how to interact with them, all because they realize that their software and their systems are extraordinarily difficult to use and understand, and that the future is making these things drop dead simple.
And, of course, those large companies, like large federal agencies, like to measure things, and their stockholders or Congress likes to be able to read what the measurements are saying. Can the benefits from design thinking be measured?
I'm sort of on the fence about that. I understand the need to have accountability, particularly when my tax dollars are at stake. But we're talking about emotional journeys, right, and experiences. And, I would be a little reticent to try to say, let's measure the overall experience somebody had in the military and come up with a number, right, and come up with like sort of a final figure of goodness, because these things are about the richness of experience. And it sounds so fuzzy to say, and so companies that are studying to engage in this are struggling with that fuzzy language. You can obviously add artificial metrics around these things, but I think actually the best sort of metric is going to be qualitative. It's probably not going to be, statistically significant unless you force it to be. And it's going to be about people's aspirations being met and sort of that overall sense of a positive experience.
And, of course, the public opinion surveys done with people interacting at websites consistently show federal government agencies low on the ranking of sites to visit. So maybe that would be one way to measure it. They could come up in those rankings based on the experience people have online.
Yeah, it certainly is. There's usability, standardized scores, and things like that. But again, those don't actually measure actual behavior. They measure sort of perceived behavior. And I would throw out there, you don't actually need to be a designer to understand that those websites are terrible. All you have to do is try to ever file or find a form. They do totally need overhauls. But some of this is actually table stakes, and you can sort of do a I know it when I see it approach to a lot of this stuff just to get it. The sort of baseline usability. And I think then we can start to focus on things like delight, right? That's a kind of a funny word to say in the context of government. I want to be delighted with my government experience. But we should be, because we all sort of spend a massive amount of money on supporting that infrastructure. Maybe delight isn't out of the question.
All right, a good word for the Transportation Security Administration. John Kalko is the Vice President of Design at Blackboard and founder and director of the Austin Center for Design. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.